Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Death row decision. President Joe Biden commutes the sentences of more than three dozen inmates. All Catholic leaders are responding. Makeshift memorial. Remembering the victims of the attack on a Christmas market as the death toll climbs. Swiss Miss. A possible new role for a former U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. Plus, a real turnoff. A church leader in Ohio is asking the faithful to put aside 15 minutes every day to possibly save our souls. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden, who leaves office next month, commuted the sentences today of 37 out of 40 inmates on federal death row. Those convicted killers, the president says, will instead sit behind bars without the possibility of parole. He released a statement this morning explaining his decision, which comes just weeks before President-elect Donald Trump, an outspoken proponent of expanding capital punishment, moves back into the Oval Office. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, in his statement, President Joe Biden said, quote, in good conscience, I cannot stand back and let a new administration resume executions that I halted, end quote. But this afternoon, Donald Trump ripped Biden, calling it an abhorrent decision, adding it's a slap in the face to the victims, their families, and their loved ones.
In making his announcement, President Joe Biden writes in part, these commutations are consistent with the moratorium my administration has imposed on federal executions in cases other than terrorism and hate-motivated mass murder. Make no mistake, I condemn these murderers, but guided by my conscience, I am more convinced than ever that we must stop the use of the death penalty at the federal level. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton blasted Biden over the move, calling it truly appalling.
So Joe Biden was willing to commute every death sentence on federal death row except for the most politically inconvenient murderers. So what message does that send to those 37 families and their friends and their fellow police officers who were shot or killed or tortured in cold blood?
The move spares the lives of people convicted in killings, including the murders of police and military officers, people on federal land, and those involved in deadly bank robberies or drug deals, as well as the killings of guards or prisoners in federal facilities. Delaware Senator Chris Coons said he encouraged the president to seriously consider the commutations. He believes there are some real questions about the fairness and the process of the death penalty in the United States, saying just yesterday,
these are people who should never be out of prison. But Pope Francis has called on President Biden, as have many other criminal justice reform leaders, faith leaders, to step aside from federal death penalties.
President-elect Donald Trump, who takes office on January 20th, has spoken frequently of expanding executions. During his first term as president, Trump also advocated for the death penalty for drug dealers. In Aurora, Colorado, in October, he told supporters,
and I'm hereby calling for the death penalty for any migrant that kills an American citizen or a law enforcement officer.
Now, Tom Cotton also said, quote, Joe Biden is using his last days in office to spare the worst monsters in America. These killers were sentenced to death by a jury of their peers, end quote. Meanwhile, three federal inmates are still facing execution. Dylan Roof, who killed nine black people at a South Carolina church, the Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, and Robert Bowers, who killed 11 congregants at a synagogue in Pittsburgh, the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. Tracy?
All right. Thank you so much for that, Owen. While many are critical of President Biden's decision to commute the sentences of nearly every convicted felon on death row, the commutations are an answered prayer for many, including Pope Francis, who prayed for the commutations of the sentences during his Angelus earlier this month.
Today, it comes to my heart to ask all of you to pray for the inmates in the United States who are in the death corridor. Let us pray for their sentence to be commuted, changed.
All right. To talk to us more about all of this is Father Thomas Petrie, president of the Pontifical Faculty of the Immaculate Conception at the Dominican House of Studies. Father Petrie, great to be with you.
Always great to be with you, Tracy.
All right. So much to unpack here. But first, I want to get your thoughts on this. Archbishop Timothy Broglio, as you know, president of the USCCB, he released a statement today about the commutations. And he wrote in that statement, this action by the president is a significant step in advancing the cause of human dignity in our nation. As we continue to proclaim the gospel in a broken world, the act of mercy is a step to closer building a culture of life. Your thoughts on that, and also your thoughts on this decision by President Biden?
Well, of course, the church's traditional doctrinal teaching is that states do have a right to recourse to the death penalty, especially for heinous crimes in which guilt is absolutely known. But the last several popes, going back at least to Pope St. Paul VI, have expressed reservations. And, of course, Pope Francis has expressed reservations of the death penalty in the strongest of terms. And this, and what Archbishop Broglio says is that in our broken world, having mercy towards those who are guilty of heinous things is a way of evangelizing that if such people are merit or worthy of an act of mercy, so is everybody else. So are you, and so am I. And so it is an evangelical call. Now, not all Catholics agree with that, that this is the way we should proceed. And there are arguments that a society should have recourse to the ultimate penalty of death for crimes that are especially heinous and that treat innocent life very cavalierly.
Yeah, and we said nearly all. Not every single one of the inmates was commuted their sentence. There were three that were not. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point, because if the death penalty is in fact immoral, as many people want to say, why is it immoral for these three? Now, President Biden clearly staked out a claim that there is a line, and it's the line that I just spoke of, which is something that's very heinous and treats life cavalierly. Now, the church doesn't say what that means or where the line is, and that's really up to politicians and those in government to express prudential judgment. But clearly the line for President Biden is acts of terrorism and acts of mass murder constituting hate crimes. Some would say that the line should be even further or lesser and include other heinous crimes, but that's a prudential argument, even among Catholics.
Yeah, and this decision by President Biden, while in line with Catholic social teaching, the other life issue, abortion, really quite vastly different. Can you sort of unpack this for us, for those who are questioning this?
Yeah, so, it's important that, a Catholic politician be praised when they do things that are good or the church views as good. So, yeah, very important that Archbishop Broglio and the U.S. bishops released this statement praising these commutations, even if one might disagree prudentially with the death penalty. But that's quite different from an issue of intrinsic evil like abortion or euthanasia, which is always evil, and there's never a prudential reason to employ them, which is to say there's never a good reason. Unlike the death penalty, which there can be legitimate and good reasons to employ it. Historically, there have been, even if today we want to follow, as I say, not just Pope Francis, but Pope Benedict, John Paul, St. Paul VI, that it shouldn't be used for evangelical reasons and for reasons of human dignity.
Yeah. Final thoughts before we close out this segment.
Well, it's, this obviously, I agree that this is a certain confrontation, or I don't want to use the word attack, but it is a bit of a slap in the face for victims, and I suspect the victims' families will feel very hurt by this. I think as Christians, and this is going to sound trite, and it's not really a great answer, but we need to work on forgiveness, not excusing, but in order to release ourselves of the anger and the pain that evil that has been done to us can often cause in us for years after the fact.
Right. Well, Father Petrie, always great to have you on, and thank you so much for helping us unpack all this and your advice. We always appreciate it.
God bless you, Tracy. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. God bless. Our president, like Donald Trump, seems to be eyeing an island property once again, Greenland. He made the comments hours after saying the U.S. should reclaim the Panama Canal.
The fees being charged by Panama are ridiculous, highly unfair,
especially knowing the extraordinary generosity that has been bestowed to Panama, I say very foolishly, by the United States.
In response, Panama's president said the canal and the surrounding zones belong to his country, not the U.S. In turn, the prime minister of Greenland responded to Trump's latest calls for control in a statement writing, quote, "We are not for sale and we will not be for sale." Trump expressed his interest in buying Greenland from Denmark during his first term, and now he is saying that it is a matter of national security that the U.S. controls Greenland. A president like Donald Trump has announced that he is nominating Callista Gingrich as U.S. ambassador to Switzerland. During the first Trump presidency, she served as the U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. Trump praised Gingrich's work at the Vatican, saying that she worked to defend international religious freedom, combat human trafficking, and provide humanitarian service around the world. The man accused of killing the UnitedHealthcare CEO pleaded not guilty to murder and terror charges. Luigi Mangione appeared in court in Manhattan for a state case that will run parallel to his federal prosecution. Mangione's attorney is concerned about the possibility of a fair trial, especially following remarks on the case by New York's mayor. The judge says the trial will be fair. All right, turning now to Germany, the country is still in shock after the deadly attack at a Christmas market in Magdeburg. A 9-year-old child is among at least 5 people who were killed. At least 200 other people were injured. A makeshift memorial for the victims is growing as mourners are adding tributes and flowers. Prosecutors say the suspect is a 50-year-old doctor from Saudi Arabia. He has lived and practiced medicine in Germany since 2006, and he is now in custody. In response to the attack, there is higher security in Rome to ensure safety during the Jubilee year. More than 700 police have been deployed in addition to the normal amount. They are keeping watch over the Vatican, the historic center, train stations, and other high-profile locations. A long-awaited House Ethics Committee report on former Congressman Matt Gaetz is out. The committee found that the Florida Republican regularly paid women tens of thousands of dollars for sex or drugs, including payment to an underage girl while in office. The House Ethics Committee concluded its 42-page report by writing, "The committee determined there is substantial evidence that Representative Gaetz violated House rules and other standards of conduct prohibiting prostitution, statutory rape, illicit drug use, impermissible gifts, special favors or privileges, and obstruction of Congress." According to the report, Gaetz used payment apps, including Venmo and PayPal, to transfer money directly to more than a dozen women during his time in Congress and possessed drugs such as cocaine and ecstasy on multiple occasions. It also says Gaetz used a fake email account from his Capitol Hill office to order marijuana. Gaetz denies all the charges. Back in November, President-elect Donald Trump tapped Gaetz for attorney general. Gaetz resigned from Congress and later withdrew his nomination, citing the ethics investigation. Some lawmakers say it's important for the report to come out.
This is not a happy day. There's nothing that's positive in this. I'm happy only in the sense that the House has to hold itself to a higher ethical standard if we're to be, you know, have the trust of the American people.
Others called on the Ethics Committee to release all previously unpublished reports.
Release all of them. I think if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. Why are they hiding all the others? Why are they protecting powerful members, former powerful, that are still powerful on this Capitol Hill?
Last year, the Justice Department decided to drop charges in sex trafficking allegations against him. Gaetz called the DOJ's probe a political witch hunt.
Maybe special counsel to go after the insider trading from my former colleagues in Congress. It seems I may not have had enough support in the United States Senate. Maybe I'll just run for Marco Rubio's vacant seat in the United States Senate and join some of those folks.
Gaetz had filed a civil claim in federal court to halt the release of the report. Among other things, Gaetz argued media coverage would be immediate and widespread. The committee's release of the report reversed an earlier decision not to make public the results of its investigation. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a lot of cars are trying to merge, a major announcement from two automakers, and at the Vatican, a grand opening of a different sort, a big event that's happening soon. two titans in the auto industry are planning to join forces. Japanese automakers Honda and Nissan have announced that they are working toward a merger. The move would create the world's third largest automaker by sales. The two companies say that they have signed a memo of understanding. They also say that Mitsubishi Motors, a smaller Nissan Alliance member, has agreed to join the talks on integrating their businesses. Automakers in Japan have lagged behind their bigger rivals in electric vehicles. Tomorrow night at the Vatican is more than the traditional Christmas Eve Mass with the Holy Father. It will also feature an opening act. EWTN Vatican journalist Magdalena Valinsky-Reedy tells us more about the Holy Door.
This moment will remind us strongly of Pope Francis's words. This will be a year of grace and forgiveness, recalling the words of the prophet Isaiah.
That moment will make Christmas Eve in St. Peter's Basilica even more special. Pope Francis will open the Holy Door at the Vatican, inaugurating the Jubilee of Hope. It only occurs every 25 years to mark the start of an ordinary holy year. The last time it happened was in 2000 with Pope St. John Paul II.
There is a special and spiritual dimension at St. Peter's because we can live here the passage of the Holy Door in the house of the Pope, in the house of the Apostle Peter.
Following a centuries-old tradition, the four holy doors of Rome's major basilicas are opened each Jubilee. Since 1500, according to the custom established by Pope Alexander VI, the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica has been the first to open, with the other basilicas following in succession.
San Pietro è il cuore della cristianità.
St. Peter's is the heart of Christianity. There is the tomb of the Prince of the Apostles, a man who somewhat mirrors our lives, reflects our frailties, even our betrayals, but also our desire to get back up and start again, and follow the Lord Jesus with more and more enthusiasm.
For this reason, St. Peter's door has a particular and profound meaning, even though 500 years ago it was just a tiny side door on the far right of the St. Peter's Basilica.
You have to remember that it was not the present basilica, but the ancient one and the portico. That sixth door, a little door used to be called the Porta Parvula, or the Golden Door, and the little door was used only for the Holy Year.
Our EWTN team explored the hidden archives of St. Peter's Basilica, nestled beneath its roof, and admired the only surviving images from the ancient era.
Here's the first map depicting the Vatican area, featuring the ancient Circus of Nero. You can also see the layout of the old basilica alongside the outlines of the new basilica that began to take shape in the early 1500s.
Is this the ancient holy door here? Are these porticos?
Here, exactly. We are practically here.
Until the 20th century, the Holy Door in the present Basilica was merely a passageway within the walls of St. Peter's. The current bronze door, featuring two leaves, was added in the Holy Year of 1950 under Pope Pius XII, and it is perfectly aligned with the 1700-year-old Constantinian Basilica, preserving its historic placement. The Holy Door, a powerful sign of mercy and hope, stands ready to open, inviting everyone to become pilgrims of hope and embrace God's love and peace. It will remain open until the 6th of January 2026, and then it will be sealed until the next Jubilee. In Rome, Magdalena Volinskariedi, EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, pastoral letter. Why one church leader in Ohio is urging the faithful to put down their phones for just 15 minutes a day. Plus, Catholic actor opens up about his powerful decision to speak at the March for Life. What made him take a stand? Pope Francis says that a child is never a mistake.
Benediciamo le mamme e diamo lode a Dio per il miracolo della vita.
The Holy Father delivered his Sunday address via live stream because he had a cold, but he still went through the traditional blessing of baby Jesus figures that will appear in nativity scenes all around the world. Want a new interview? Catholic actor Jonathan Rumi talks about his decision to speak at the March for Life 2 years ago. I believe in the sanctity of life from the moment of conception. For me, it's a spiritual thing that has been usurped and turned into a political weapon that divides people in such a way where they no longer see the spirituality of the issue. Rumi, of course, is best known for his portrayal of Jesus on the TV series The Chosen. This year's March for Life will be held on January 24th, and EWTN will have complete coverage of this year's event. Well, finally, tonight, a church leader in Ohio is asking the faithful in his diocese to spend 15 minutes each day in prayer and reflection. In an open letter to the faithful of Cleveland, Bishop Edward Mlesek says that it will be a great benefit to put down our phones and take a rest in the Lord. The secular workday, school schedules, and the challenges of raising a family can be all-encompassing, leaving us feeling pressed for time. As your bishop, I am convinced that none of those things will matter or be effective if we are not serious about deepening our friendship with God. And joining us now is Bishop Edward Mlesek from the Diocese of Cleveland. Your Excellency, wonderful to be with you today. We really appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
So first off, tell us why you decided to write this letter and about the timing of it. Why now?
You know, I've been here for 4 years. People, ever since I came, they always, and this is typical, people say, well, what's your vision for the diocese? And I always said, well, the vision is for the diocese is the vision that Jesus has for our diocese. And we have to figure out how to bring that vision about into reality. So after 4 years and going to different parishes, I decided to write a letter from my heart to the people that I've come to love and the people that I serve. And it's simply a letter that encourages them to draw closer to Jesus and their relationship with Jesus. I think that's just so important to do that, you know, we're not going to have a flourishing church if the people are not centered and rooted in Christ. So it's a, I think, a very basic letter trying to encourage people to give some time to prayer, to gather together in small groups, to share faith, because when we're together, our faith is increased, to reflect on their own story and then tell the story of why am I Catholic? Why do I love the Lord? Being able to express that to others, whether that's co-workers or family members, and then to form parishes that have, I always talk the three major reasons for a parish is worship, evangelization, and service.
Yeah, so important. I know you mentioned putting down our phones for 15 minutes every day as a way to pray.
Unless you're using an app. There's a lot of good apps out there, so that's okay, but not to be distracted. You know, it is crazy. We're so distracted these days.
Yeah. Talk to us more about that. I mean, just being silent. And do you have any other more practical advice for the faithful, too, to spend more time with our Lord each day?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I mean, I often tell people, even in the car, turn off the radio in the morning if you're going to work. You don't need to hear all that. Just kind of be in silence. Let the Lord speak to you. Let the Lord love you. Certainly, there's a lot of different ways to pray with scriptures, whether that's reading through one of the Gospels or one of the letters of St. Paul. There are many things that do, you know, involve looking at screens. We have apps that are very popular these days, but don't just read the app. You know, after you read that reflection, then put it down and just be in silence and let the Lord talk to you. How has the Lord been speaking to you through these reflections? Here in the Diocese of Cleveland, we have a wonderful thing called My Daily Prayers. And I know a lot of people are listening to those. And it's a simple reflection followed by very traditional prayers. It takes about 8 to 10 minutes. But then after those 8 to 10 minutes, you know, to just kind of sit in silence, and whether that's with a cup of coffee or tea or just looking out the window, and then letting the Lord love you. Letting the Lord, you know, we are children of God, and the Lord wants to love us.
Yeah, I love that so much. And sometimes people say, well, I can't find time in the day. Well, you can find 15 minutes.
Well, I preached a homily once when I was a pastor of a small parish, Holy Infant Parish, now in outside of Strinestown, but I preached a sermon once and people said hit home. I said, if you are too busy to pray, you are too busy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm curious, Your Excellency, what's been the response to this?
I was at Mass yesterday. I had Mass yesterday here at the cathedral. A young man came up and said, I read your letter. Will you sign it for me? I want your autograph. So I said, sure. No problem doing that. So it's been a very, very positive response. I think the clergy of the diocese have remarked that it's good. And it's a simple letter. So there's nothing, I don't know if there's anything profound about it. Just pray, gather together. Reflect on why you're Christian, why you're Catholic, why you love the Lord, share it, and then go out on mission.
I love it. So simple, but so important and meaningful. Thank you so much, Your Excellency, Absolutely. For coming on, sharing this with us. We really appreciate it. God bless you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Have a great holiday season with Christ at the center of it, and we'll have a great Christmas celebration. Blessed New Year to you, too, as well.
And Merry Christmas to you all. Thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.